Welcome to Food Conversations, a program about food in all its aspects, from planting seeds to eating, with a special emphasis on establishing food sovereignty in the Shuswap. I'm your host, Warren Bell, and you're listening to us on CKVS FM 93.7, the voice of the Shuswap, community radio for the people, with the people, and by the people. And I'm in the studio today with, as usual, Steve Corey, the show's producer, who's managing the board and will be making some announcements as we go on through the program. Today, our guests are two people who've played a very important role in the food security and food distribution system in the Shuswap area and Salmon Arm. They are Herman and Louise Bruins, a couple who've farmed in the Shuswap for nearly 30 years. Herman and Louise have pioneered a number of approaches to food growing and distribution in this area and have become well known to many local citizens who care about the quality of the food they eat and the integrity of the people who grow it. Today you're going to learn how they came to Salmon Arm, how they started their farm and have become what they are now today, coordinators of the all-organic market that can be found on Wednesday afternoons in the plaza of Askew's Uptown. Welcome, Louise and Herman.
Hi, Warren.
Thanks, Warren.
Good morning. I've caught you out in the field. I've caught you out in the field making food in the way that it really happens in the real world. You put it in the ground, and then you grow it, and then you look after it, and then you harvest it, and then you take it out to the market. This is the background of real food. We're seeing it today. Anyway, welcome to the show, to Food Conversations. Let's start at the beginning. The famous saga of the Bruins family began in Tumbler Ridge. Now, Tumbler Ridge is a little town of about 2,000, used to be about 4,000, near the Alberta border on the other side of the Rockies. It's a coal mining town built just for that purpose, but you guys weren't there coal mining. Tell me what each of you was there for. Herman, why were you in Tumbler Ridge?
I was working as an environmental planner at the coal mine, responsible for air and water quality monitoring.
And did you feel that your work was welcomed by the mining community?
Yeah, I mean, the mines have to meet their permit requirements, right. And that was my job to make sure that we did what we were required to do in terms of monitoring and submitting results for water quality and air quality in the area so that we were meeting our permit requirements.
And Louise, what brought you to a coal mining, purpose-built coal mining village?
Well, I went there as a summer student working on a reclamation research project. So I was basically trying to garden in mine waste.
Did it work? Was it successful?
Well, we were looking into, we were doing experiments with native species and seeing how successful they might be in revegetating some of the mine waste areas.
And what did you find?
Well, didn't find out a whole lot in the short amount of time I was there. It was mostly experimental and lots of collecting seeds in the field and trying to propagate them in a greenhouse. And so I had a little greenhouse that I worked in there. But ultimately, I really wanted to be growing food. And so
food.
I kind of went away from the science side of things.
Indeed.
And migrated towards farming.
So
that's where Louise and I actually, the first day that we met was building this greenhouse together. That was our first job together.
That's probably a good place to meet for future dyed-in-the-wool farmers.
Yeah, now we have like 14 greenhouses.
Yes, you've gone over the top. Now, Herman, you were an escaping dairy farmer trying to move away from the farming business, and yet you had a background in farming. You had a solid background in farming in Mara when you came up to that part of the world.
Yeah, so I grew up just a mile down the road from where we are right now and on a dairy farm and of course, was involved in every aspect of the dairy farm. But, yeah, I wanted to go to university and get a degree and get a different kind of job instead of farming, which I thought would be a little bit easier.
And Louise, you came from
circumstances.
Yeah, Louise, you came from
back to the same place.
You came from the opposite end of the spectrum, Louise. You had not had any sort of pragmatic experience in farming, but you had studied geography and you took some environmental courses as well.
Yeah, I did a joint degree in geography and biology and took a bunch of environmental studies courses. And then I started going to, there was a lot of interest in sustainable agriculture at the, and some interesting talks, like lunchtime talks going on at the on the UVic campus when I was at UVic for a couple of years. And I got really excited about it then and decided that I wanted to work on a farm. And so I volunteered on a farm in Tumbler Ridge. And then I worked on a farm in Chase, actually, which is now Golden Ears farm for a season before jumping into our own project here.
So you must have been persuasive, Louise, because you brought Herman back to his roots in farming and you came back down to this part of the world in, I believe, 1992. And away you went. You started your farm. Herman,
I was definitely the starry-eyed idealist.
Well, if you can convince a hard-nosed pragmatist that your starry-eyed idealism is worth listening to, it must have been a pretty important moment in both of your lives. Herman, you got land when you got back here. Tell us about the land acquisition process.
Yeah, we were looking for land in various places, actually, and we were considering Smithers and the Nelson area, but ultimately my dad offered me or offered us this piece of land that he purchased way back when he was first starting his farm, and he felt he could he really wanted us to be close by and have us farming here, so that was that was what he did. So
and you started building your house where he had bulldozed the previous house from.
Yeah, when he bought it in the early 60s, it was kind of just a ramshackle, lots of little shacks and you know, kind of a rundown farm. And so he just wanted to use it as a field for growing fodder for his cows, his dairy herd. And so he cleared all the older buildings away and turned it into just a flat field. And then when we came along, we had to do the opposite, turn it back from a field into put some buildings on it, a house.
Isn't it interesting how Louise, coming from a non-farming background, inspires a farmer who's said, I want to try something different, to go back into the farming world? It just shows how relationships and serendipity makes an enormous difference in all of our lives. And so you came back and you started to build the house and Louise was the farmer. Tell us about that.
So we
started really small, just thinking that we would have I would have almost like a little sideline, small little market garden and maybe sell a few things at a farmer's market. And Herman would have maybe a government job as a biologist or something, and he would be making the income, and it would almost be like a hobby farm. But anyway, one thing led to another, and it didn't.
Little did you know. Tell us about your first greenhouse, Louise.
Well, it was a really small, makeshift little greenhouse built with some extra plastic that we had left over from building our house and some PVC pipe. I think it was about 10 feet by 10 feet.
Yeah, something like that.
And then we stuck an old wood stove in there.
Out in front.
Started a few seedlings, and then everything was going along fine until one night the wood stove got out of control, and I don't know if it was the chimney or something overheated, and a lot of melted plastic and dead plants the next morning.
Oh my goodness. There's a story of every farm. At some point, something goes right off the rails and you have to just bounce back. My goodness.
Yep.
And Herman, you were all this time, you were supplying scraps of material for the greenhouse and building your home. And in the middle of all this, Louise was pregnant and about to give birth. And then your parents came out. And you had a straw bale welcome for them in the front of your house. Tell us about that.
Well, it's just that we hadn't gotten around to building the front steps yet because I was busy trying to get the house so that we could actually move in. And then it was Louise's parents that came for a visit from Victoria. And they weren't super keen on her going on this venture, this farming venture, to begin with. And then we were worried that, you know, having to use a straw bale to get into the house as a step to get into the house would really push them over the edge. So we thought, oh, we better quickly build a set of stairs. So I had some lumber lying around, and while Louise went to the airport to pick them up,
it was nip and tuck. It was nip and tuck timing. Well, that's the famous Japanese just-in-time delivery process in action. Well done. But in the middle of all this, you were also starting to work towards organic certification, which is it's a three-year process. It's laborious. There's many stages to it. How was that playing out in this little hobby farm that you guys were starting up, but were obviously, by seeking organic certification, was becoming more of a real business proposal?
Yeah, so the organic certification system was actually just starting around that time too. I think the North Okanagan Organic Association was formed in just a couple of years before we started farming. So the standards were at that time, still changing quite quickly, but the basic process is still the same, and that is that there's a three-year transition. So, and where you're using organic practices, but you aren't able to claim, make an organic claim necessarily. You're not certified organic until you've gone through the 3 years.
Right. Louise, your interest in farming was specifically in organic farming, was it not? You wanted to grow food that way.
Yeah, I just had a strong, desire to be a food producer. And then it was kind of a no-brainer that it was going to be done organically.
What for you was the difference between the conventional way of growing and organic growing? What drew you to that specifically?
Well, I think it was a combination of health and environmental reasons, because I definitely had a strong environmental influence. And through my university courses, I was leaning in that direction.
Right.
And so, yeah, I really, I guess it's the inputs in terms of chemicals and their effect on the environment in the conventional system, and also, on the food that we put in our bodies. And
right. It's said that the demographic in our society that is most keen on environmental issues or environmentally related issues is mothers with young children. Did having young kids also, and knowing that you would be feeding them food that would have an influence on their health, did that play into it in your thinking?
Yeah, although I think that, I was feeling quite strongly about that before we had kids. I don't think it was a huge factor, but I just remember really feeling like in those days, organic food was not a really big thing, and it wasn't widely recognized or widely available. Mm-hmm. And I felt like this was something I felt strongly about, that I wanted to be part of the solution in coming up with a way to provide that for my community. And so
away you went. So here's the beginning of Wild Flight Farms, an organic farm, going through the process of organic certification, this complicated three-year process that was just, as you say, starting up, bringing organic food into a world that is only starting to wake up to how important that is. So in order to get going, you started up with an innovative system for distributing your food, and that's called the community-supported agriculture. Just starting up, Herman, you and Louise heard about that through a conference at Harrison Hot Springs.
Yeah, we were lucky enough to be able to attend this. It was a Pacific Northwest Direct Farm Marketing Conference, So it's a North America-wide conference series that gets held in a different city each year, and it happened to be in Harrison Hot Springs. And one of the speakers was a guy named Dan Weens, who had been pioneering that concept, what he called actually community shared agriculture. The U.S. folks tend to call it community supported agriculture, but he wanted a different twist because he felt that the word should be shared because the customers and the farmers were sharing in the risks of farming. And that was his approach. So that's what he was talking about. And we were inspired, along with several other local farmers, to try and implement that for ourselves.
Now, this was not a new concept in the world. Louise, it started in faraway places like Japan and Switzerland. Those were the places where it was originated. How do you recall it seemed to come to this part of the world? I mean, obviously, some people must have done it before you did it. Where did this seem to be starting up in North America?
Well, I guess it started with this fellow Dan Weens in Winnipeg, who we saw at the conference. I think he was the first farm in Canada.
Yeah.
And I'm not sure how many other farms were doing it or starting to adopt it in Canada at the time that we adopted it. Probably a bunch of other growers that were at that same conference.
They all got inspired at the same time.
Yeah. But it was being done in the States before that.
Yeah. Yeah. We attended a conference in the States a few years later, the EcoFarm conference in California. And I think it was a pretty big movement already at that time down there.
So just for listeners to understand, what's the basic way the CSA system works?
Well, the way it works is that the farmer, it's a subscription system. And so the farmer agrees to grow a certain amount of food. And in our case, we had two different sizes of shares, we called them. And so there was a basic share and then a family share, which included a larger amount of each of those items or some additional items. And every week you would get a box of assorted vegetables, whatever was in season from the farm. And the customer subscribes and pays up front at the beginning of the season for their however many weeks, probably from
24.
I think ours was 24 weeks, a weekly box of vegetables. And you don't know exactly what's going to be in your box from week to week because it's going to change depending on what's in season. And so the farmer gets a guaranteed of a certain amount of income, a sale for their produce, and the customer gets a guaranteed portion of the harvest and a weekly delivery.
So a central feature of this is that you establish a relationship between the people who are eating your food and yourselves. There's a relationship between customers, if you like,
yeah,
and the growers.
And I remember being really shocked when we first started this in the early years, because a lot of these people, I mean, we had no reputation at that point. We were brand new to doing this. And these people who we'd never met before and had no clue whether we could actually grow vegetables were mailing us checks. it was quite like the faith and trust that was involved in that. It felt like a huge responsibility.
Did it add a certain urgency as you watched the plants growing to make sure that they actually came out of the ground and became food sources?
Yeah, it does. It does. That is sort of the downside of the CSA model for the farmer, is it does create quite a bit of pressure to perform. Whereas when you're going to a farmer's market, it's like, oh, well, we've had a crop failure on such and such, and so we're just not going to bring it this week. But I remember packing the boxes for our customers, and sometimes I could actually, I would get to know these people, and I would see them in my mind as I was putting stuff into their box and feel this responsibility to them. And I just feel so bad if we were short of something. And it was almost like, putting on a performance each week and wanting people to be happy with what we produce.
Full disclosure, I was one of your early customers, and I can tell you from the customer's point of view, I had no such misgivings. I simply thought this is a wonderful idea, and if you guys are willing to go out in the field and plant the crops and harvest them and bring them into the, you know, sort of process them and put them in the box, it was all right with me. It was, and I'm sure that's what was the sentiment broadly among your early clients. Now, your early clients were small in number, 10 to 15 people as a beginning of your process. What was that like, 10 to 15 people out there taking your boxes, and will there be 20, will there be 25? Did you have that sort of anxiety about how will it grow, Herman?
Well, we weren't. We were still at that time also going to farmers markets in other towns. So we started this in Salmon Arm because we wanted to just create an alternative to the farmers market in Salmon Arm. And so we weren't too concerned at that point. We didn't have a lot of produce either, and we were able to sell the rest at farmers markets. But yeah, we thought, well, we'll see where this goes, and hopefully it'll grow. And it did very quickly after that.
The final count, as I understand it, eventually was about 125, roughly speaking.
Yeah, it grew to about 125 in a space of about 3 or 4 years.
So yeah. Getting the food from your boxes, getting your boxes to your clients, that took place in various parts of the town. Louise, by the way, Louise, this is a little audio thing. If you can move a little closer to the microphone, then we can hear you even better. Louis, we want to get the two of you close, equally close. So Louise, you went to different places. You were the parking lot kids. I think you figured out where to distribute it from 3 or 4 different parking lots. What was the sequence there? You started off, I think, at the community center, the old community center where the current courthouse city hall complex is located.
Yeah, the senior center.
Yeah, the senior center.
And most of the places that we ended up over the years were suggested or sort of enabled by customers who really wanted to help us out. And so... I believe it was a customer who suggested and lined that up for us in the beginning.
Right.
And then from there, I think we floated around short term to a few different places that didn't work out. And then we ended up at the Catholic Church for a few years through a customer who coordinated that as well. And then from there, we were welcomed at the Deo Lutheran Church for many years.
Now, as I understand it, that was a place where you really felt welcome. That Pastor Eric Bjorgen, I think you were introduced by George Zorn, who I guess would have been one of your customers as well. That changed things quite a bit.
Yeah, that was. They were very enthusiastic about having a market on their property and really encouraged us to also were supportive of the idea of us inviting other vendors and making it more into a joint market with a variety of products.
So was that their idea? Was that their idea, Louise, or Eric's idea?
You know, it was so long ago, I can't remember whether it was their idea or whether we broached it to them. Yeah. It all kind of came together and that was when it became more we started calling it the all organic market and had some other local organic vendors join us.
So who was your Herman? Who was your first new visitor to the site, to your organic market?
You mean the first new vendor that we invited?
Right. Yeah, do you remember?
I guess David Miege from Bastion Ranch has been with us for quite a while. I think he's probably the longest. The vendor that's been with the market the longest besides ourselves. I'm not sure if he was the first, but certainly he's been there from the beginning. Little Red Hen was also coming to the market for a while.
Both of them still around, and Little Red Hen has moved into Askew's, the store, and Bastion Meats is right there with you.
Yeah, they decided to... go the route of supplying stores more so than just going to farmers markets. And so, but they were there for a number of years.
So throughout Samus. This process, the CSA concept seemed to be, I think you said it to me at one point, that the honeymoon was over. The CSA concept was fading. What were the factors that caused that transition to a direct market as opposed to a food box?
Well, I think it was just partly fashion. You know, the CSA was a new concept, and a lot of people were excited about it in the early years, and then they gradually began to realize that they kind of wanted to go back to picking and choosing what they wanted. The novelty of having it, having no choice and just being presented with a surprise box each week kind of wore off. And it might have also had to do with the fact that over the years, organic food started to become more available in different retail outlets, and there were more opportunities to buy it. When we started out, it was sort of like the only option locally. But as more options opened up, I think people became a little more, you know, picky and choosy and wanted to be able to not get everything from us. Like, they'd like to buy something somewhere else and just come by the market and grab what they needed. It's just more flexibility is what I think was driving it.
And by this time, you already had a pretty solid customer base. Would that also be fair to say?
Yeah.
Yeah, we had the 125 and even more, because some people wouldn't do every season with us, or they'd only do, you know, some years and not other years. So we had quite a good list of customers.
And then the earth opened up and you were swallowed up by a totally new notion, and that was joining in a very public parking lot instead of a church parking lot that people had to know exactly where it was in order to find it. You became involved in the Askew's Uptown, process, because you were involved when it was still in the planning and designing and construction stage. How did that come about?
Well, yeah, I don't know if I would say we were involved in the planning, but...
No, you weren't. I agree.
We had heard from actually a young fellow that worked on the farm here and was also an architect that worked on the Askew store, that an open-air market square concept was something that Askew's was interested in incorporating into their plan. And so we knew that they had leanings in that direction. And through conversations with David Askew, and then ultimately approaching George Green, who was the manager of the Uptown store at the time, we kind of broached this idea to them of hosting a market, and assuming that it was something that they would feel fairly hesitant about and need to mull over for a considerable amount of time. And we were really surprised when they got back to us almost immediately and like full on embraced the idea and wanted to do everything they could to make it happen. So that was a huge step, and we're still really, really heartened and really pleased with how supportive they are.
And I think our customers also really responded super positively to that. I remember the first few days that we held markets there, everyone was coming up and saying, "Oh, this is such a great idea. And it makes it so much more convenient because I can go in and get the rest of my groceries while I'm here. And I can even, you know, and there's good parking." And people were just super supportive. And I think they also, you know, passed that sentiment on to the store itself and to Askew's, because they were so excited about it.
Now, Louise, you were saying, and Herman, you were agreeing that this was a surprise, obviously an astonishingly positive surprise, when Askew's immediately embraced your presence in their parking lot. Tell me why it was such a surprise. You obviously had anxieties. Would it work out? Would they be positive, et cetera, et cetera? What did it signal to you that they were so rapidly and enthusiastically on side with your concept. Herman?
Well, I think when we originally approached them, we thought that we would just use, you know, be out of the way and you know, not interfere with them and be in some far corner of their parking lot. But I think their approach was, let's make this really a part of our store's image and really bring it close to the store and create the atmosphere of a market in front of the store. And, you know, we just hadn't been thinking about it in those terms. And so that was sort of, I think, the surprising part. And so we weren't sort of thinking about what would be the benefit for them. We were just thinking, well, they would be granting us the permission to use their parking lot. But they saw it quite differently.
So were you at that point accustomed to the idea that there were like two separate worlds? There was the major, you know, retail sector, and then there were struggling organic farmers who were on the periphery of that and had a great deal of difficulty breaking into that world of large-scale retail. Was that part of what was going on? I'm just speculating here.
Well, yeah, I mean, we through our experience and other farmers markets experience that we've heard about over the years, there generally is more or has been more of a feeling of threatened sort of competition from farmers markets, that they get in the way and they block access and they're bad for business if they're on downtown streets or in another business's parking lot. And so that was the prevailing attitude at the time. And so we had a feeling that Askew's would have a different take on it. And, you know, just from their track record, that they would be have a more progressive point of view. But we were definitely surprised at how you know, quickly they adopted the idea and embraced it. And I think, you know, it just shows that if you have a cooperative, community-minded approach, that it has benefits for everyone in the end. And
this reminds me of what you were saying about when you started up your farm and the CSA concept, and you were taking checks from people when you hadn't delivered anything to them at all. And here you are kind of moving into a relationship with a fairly substantial retail outlet in the community where you don't know, you're having these discussions, but you don't know, is it going to actually be a positive engagement or is it going to be ho-hum, as you visualized it, off in the back corner of the parking lot? What did it do when you realized that they were embracing you into their kind of world? Herman or Louise, what did that do for you guys? Obviously, it had a big impact.
Well, I guess, yeah, it does have a really positive impact. And in some ways, you know, after all those years, it kind of helps to legitimize what we're doing. Because when you feel like you're sort of marginalized and sort of hunting around town for places to go and not really wanted, and then it sort of makes you feel like what you're doing isn't really valued all that much. And or that maybe, I don't know, it was definitely, it really helped us feel like what we were doing was accepted.
That's an interesting idea. It's almost like as you went from parking lot to parking lot in non-purpose-built parking lots, and then you suddenly come to this very visible location where a large crowd of people come on a daily basis to buy a wide range of food. You have suddenly come out of the shadows, as it were, Herman. You're now a visible part of the food community. You're not just skulking around in parking lots. You're right.
Yeah, but I should qualify that though with the Deo Lutheran Church, of course, was extremely welcoming, and
yes,
we have nothing but appreciation for all the support that they gave us in the years that we were there. But the difference with Askew's is that they're you know, a for-profit business venture, and so that they were willing to take that step was sort of a, you know, taking it to a different level.
Yes, welcome you into the retail community, so as it were.
We were very fortunate over the years that we did have the locations that we had to be able to hold our market and meet our customers. But in a general sense, I know it has been a struggle for a lot of farmers and farmers markets to find locations where they can carry out their activities.
Indeed. Herman, this changed your volume of sales when you started up at Askew's.
Yeah, I mean, we kind of expected that because suddenly we're in a much more visible location. In when we were at the church parking lots, only people who really knew or were tapped into the grapevine that and knew that we were there would be coming. But here, people that were just strolling into the store could see the market being set up and come by and check it out and learn about what we were doing. And so that we expected that sales would increase, and they certainly did fairly significantly. So it's definitely been a positive thing from that perspective as well.
So your sales volume, you told me, had pretty much doubled as you, and fairly quickly once you got into that new location. And also,
yeah, I think after 3 or 4 years, it was probably about right. double of what we were doing before that.
But it also had a positive impact on Askew's. You found that out as well.
Yeah, certainly in talking to George Green and now Heather Turner, both of them mentioned that they definitely notice an uptick of sales when the market is on, to the point where they actually planned or bring in extra staff on those days to handle the extra volume. So it's been great for them as well, from what I understand anyway. Yeah.
This kind of illustrates a point that's come up repeatedly interviewing people in the show, and that is that it's a lot of it is about relationships. When you've mentioned that you've found various venues to distribute or sell produce through some of your clients, some of your customers, they would find a place for you. Nick was an architecture, training in architecture, but also had been a farmer and was attuned to both sides of the story. Now there's a relationship that is a budding relationship with a major retail outlet in which you gain and they gain. There's a mutual benefit arising from it. That seems to me a bit of a harbinger of where a lot of systems in our society are going. We're discovering that collaboration and mutual support is a better way to go than everybody doing it off in their own corner. Do you have some comments about that, Louise or Herman?
Well, I think everything you say is true.
Yeah. I guess the other thing that I would say too is that Askew's is well on a path of providing a lot of organic choices in their stores already. And so there's a bit of a fit, a good fit with our market as well, in that all our organic products just add to their selection as well. And so if people come and get some organic vegetables from us, they can go in and get organic yogurt and organic peanut butter and organic oats or whatever they, you know, and whatever else they need. And so I think there's a bit of a connection in there as well that both benefit from, you know, having more of an organic center there.
Now, you also have been selling your produce in other settings besides right in Salmon Arm. Tell listeners a little bit about your other settings that you've gone to. Revelstoke is one.
Yeah. Yeah, we do. We've been going to the Revelstoke Farmers Market from pretty much the first year that we started farming. And Revelstoke was, despite being a relatively small community, was really influential in the development of our farm as well, in that our volume of sales there were generally double of what we could sell in Salmon Arm. And so that played a big influence. And then also there's a company in Kelowna that does organic home delivery of vegetables. And they made the choice when they started about 20 years ago to source as much of what they could from local farmers. And that commitment has made a huge impact, not only for our farm, but several other farms in the area, to the point that we each week we send our delivery truck goes all the way to Kelowna completely full of organic vegetables from our farm and from half a dozen other farms in the North Okanagan here that supply that that one company.
Where would you say?
And in the meantime, another company has started too in Vernon called Farmbound.
Where would you say the biggest volume of your produce now goes? Where, like, in terms of the percentage, how much goes to Revelstoke? How much goes to Kelowna? How much is sold through the market in Salmon Arm?
Well, Revelstoke is probably still the main our main market in terms of the volume that we sell, right. But Salmon Arm has definitely increased in the last few years, like I was saying earlier, and it's probably about 2/3 of what we sell in Revelstoke. So that's been really great, and we still sell quite a significant amount to Kelowna as well.
So we've got our trajectory of the Bruins family up to the beginning of last year, and suddenly there's an overturning of a lot of the ways we do things when a 200 nanometer virus, a coronavirus, suddenly appears on the scene and starts to become a bit of a preoccupation with more or less everybody in the world, I would say. And obviously, therefore, has an impact on Wildflight Farm and the all-organic market. Now, it really changed a lot. Herman, in about 3 or 4 or 5 days, you instituted an online ordering system so that people could figure out what they wanted to get, whip in and whip out if they needed to. Tell us about that online ordering system that you put into place. You'd already started doing some of this already before then, but tell us a little bit about Local Line and how you got involved with that system.
Yeah, so we were really fortunate in that we had already been using this platform called Local Line. It's a Canadian startup company that was set up to try to connect local farmers with local buyers. And we'd been using it for some of our other our wholesale customers and also some of our bulk sales. And then when COVID hit, we realized we needed to quickly transfer all of our sales onto the online platform. And so that, because we were familiar with the platform, we were able to do it fairly quickly. And in the space of several, less than a week, we were able to make that transition, and people were very motivated to adopt that system as well, just to reduce the level of contact at a farmer's market. Generally, farmer's markets are known for being crowded, busy places, and now we had to do the opposite. We had to spread them out and try to get rid of, reduce the crowds. And this was one way of being able to do it, because people could come quickly, grab their box, they could prepay it with an e-transfer, and just be on their way, and really reduce the amount of crowding.
Farmers markets are crowded places, and also they're social places where people go to meet often like-minded folks who are on the same wavelength that they are with respect to food and many other matters in terms of the way the world is going. That meant that you had a faster, more efficient system, if you like, for getting people through the market. I recall initially that you had lineups that would go quite a distance away from the food site itself, and people gradually became comfortable with that. Your other vendors also participated actively. What kind of changes overall did you see? For example, CSA suddenly came back on the scene. You guys didn't do a CSA, but some other farmers, maybe closer to the beginning of their farming presence, went straight back to CSAs.
Yeah, so some farmers that had CSAs or were doing them already discovered that their CSA subscriptions sold out very quickly. So that was a great benefit for them, for sure. And with respect to, the lineups, for sure, at first we weren't very organized, or we didn't have good systems for distributing all the orders, and it resulted in longer lineups when people came to pick it up. But then gradually, as we figured out how to do this better and how to find, because we had quite a few, we just weren't used to having to look for 200, look for a person's name in 200 orders. Before that, we had at most 20. And so it was suddenly a bit of a shift. And so we had to do things quite differently to be able to manage all that. And over time, we've figured that out. And it's I think it's going to be here to stay now, that we will have an online component to every farmer's market, or most farmer's markets.
Yeah, speaking of somebody who uses a system, it quickly becomes a very efficient way to see what's available and order stuff. I must confess, for me personally, it's been a very helpful way to do things, especially since I and many other people find it hard to get up to the market in time if you're still working. And that
the market's a very small time window. They're only like 3 hours from 2 to 5. And so, you know, not everyone can adjust their schedule. So this way they can just order something and then get someone else to pick it up for them, and makes it really easy.
So, Louise, on the farm, how did COVID impact how you did things on the farm? Obviously, you've got this massive bunch of orders coming in online, and you also have people working on the farm with, you know, this 200 nanometer virus on everybody's mind. How did it alter things for the actual day-to-day operation of the farm?
Well, first of all, I bought how many liters was it?
20-liter bucket.
A 20-liter bucket of hand sanitizer at Canadian Tire. And then, we had to sort of restructure our packing shed. That was the main area where we had to really, you know, worry about, because that's where people are interacting more.
Right.
Our packing and washing facility. So we made some changes there. And working out in the field, not so much of an influence, because we're outdoors and we can easily space apart.
Of course.
But our whole, all our indoor work had to be very careful about, and institute a bunch of rules and regulations, and we couldn't eat lunch together anymore. Well, we kind of did, but we very spaced apart. So lunchtime camaraderie and conversations were not really the same anymore. So that affected the atmosphere on the farm. Stress levels are pretty high because of this whole new system that we're all trying to adapt to, and with the online ordering and the packing of those orders at the farm, and the logistics. And every week we were figuring out something that didn't work and something we had to change, and we were making mistakes and, you know, or having issues with the orders, and we'd get and I have to say that most of our customers were extremely patient and, were really good to deal with. But we would feel bad when mistakes were made and things were missed, as they inevitably were. And so it did create some extra pressure on our end. And it was definitely a little more of a tense and stressful year than other years that we've had.
I wonder if this actually brings back the issue that we talked about earlier on the show, and that was the issue of relationships. You said you were concerned that you would not measure up to the expectations of your customers, but your customers were patient. It suggests that your customers knew you. They knew that your way of working was to try and do it right, not in order to make more money, just to make money, but not just to make money. It was to do the job right. Did you sense that, as you said, your customers were patient, and that therefore you had a little more room to maneuver than, say, if you were an impersonal retail store where people just said, I want this and it's not on the shelf, and got annoyed and sort of complained. Did you ever think that that might be a better situation to be in yourselves, to have this kind of customer base that cared about you as much as you cared about doing the right thing for them?
Yeah, it definitely helped a lot that we have a strong, committed customer base, and they were all, you know, willing to jump on board with us and learn to use the system that we were saddling them with all of a sudden. and then, you know, in the process, I think a lot of them have discovered that there's lots of things they like about it, and they probably will continue to use it even after they don't have to anymore. We feel really fortunate to have that kind of support. I have heard a lot of stories from other businesses who have, you know, people have been rude or abusive to them or intolerant, and we really have, I can't even think of a single instance where we felt we've been treated that way.
That's an enviable record to have. And I have a sense that in the relationship between food producers and food consumers, the more connection there is there, the more likely it is that you achieve this kind of relationship and you get this kind of outcome. When difficulties arise, people all kind of pull together. The customers manifest patience and you manifest anxiety as you try to get it together. At one point, I think you told me, Herman, you were processing roughly 500 or more orders between Salmon Arm Revelstoke and I guess Kelowna to some extent as well. This size of operation has also brought in other producers, and we just have a few minutes more to go, and we'll talk more about the current situation in the next show, which for listeners will be in 2 weeks' time, and we'll talk more about where we're going in the food world in this area. But you've branched out and got a range of other suppliers that you engage with to get the volume of food that you need to be able to sell. And one of them is Discovery Organics down at the coast in Vancouver, Burnaby originally, but now in Vancouver. It's been in place for just about as long as you've been doing business. And it's become a hub as well for organic food that you make use of on a regular basis.
Yeah, so our first priority is always to try and source some when we don't have enough of something, and or it's something that we don't grow. For example, we don't grow apples or pears, so we always try to source it from our neighbors or from our region first. And then when we can't get those items, we'll look further afield, and that's where Discovery Organics is a organic distributor, and they import vegetables from all of North America and beyond, and offer it make it available to businesses like ours that need more produce to supply in the winter. And so, in particularly in the winter, when there's not much in the way of greens, we're able to get some greens to add to our selection, which makes the winter market just that much more viable for both, not only for us, but also for all our other vendors who depend on enough customers coming to the market to make it worth their while to come as well.
So I think we're going to draw the program to a close.